Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to the show, everybody. In this first month of resolutions for a new year, I thought I would mention this, that I read a Wall Street Journal article on January 9th entitled, "An Orthopedic Surgeon Stays Disciplined with Sweaty Selfies." And that is the secret to this orthopedic surgeon. Her name is Cheryl Handler Madisar's weight loss. So Cheryl's 43. She's a mother of 3, 9, 11, and 15. And she was having difficulty fitting in her workout, and she didn't want to buy a whole set of new clothes. So she learned through a friend's Facebook post, who became a coach for the in-home fitness company Beachbody and was starting a workout group. Handler joined 25 women from all over the country and even in Canada and New York and Texas. And after each daily workout, she posted a sweaty, embarrassing picture of herself with a private Facebook group. In October 2015, study by researchers at the University of Pennsylvania, led by the professor Damon Santola, found that online networks can actually encourage exercise. Social competition works because we naturally compare ourselves to people like us and use them to evaluate whether we're doing better or worse, says Dr. Santola. Buddy networks, created online platforms such as Facebook, are great tools for social comparison. The study showed that online support groups where peers were used solely as sources of encouragement rather than social comparison actually backfired, which I was kind of shocked about. You know, I thought having the support and encouragement from a group on Facebook would be really helpful in kind of losing weight. But in this study, the least active members created a social inertia that pulled the others to exercise less, he says. So without friendly competition, such as posting a workout photo each day as a motivation for social interactions, people can use inactivity among their online peers as an excuse to lower their own levels of activity, he says. So find a way of automatically posting your group's exercise data so lapses in record keeping aren't mistaken for lapses in activity. So in the studio today, we have Dean Hires, and he is one of the co-founders of Sage Presence. And we just had in the studio Pete Makarek, his partner. Pete and I met through LinkedIn, and I contacted him. Then we ended up meeting, and then Dean and I, across from me, I'm looking right
Hi,
at
Nancy.
Him. Hi, Dean. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Great to be
yes.
here.
Yes. And so I thought, you know, a New Year's resolution that people have is many people are trying to like not use social media as much. But in this article, it was interesting to see that actually, why don't you investigate what social media you like to use and find a way for it to be useful? So you're not just, you know, searching what everybody else is doing and kind of it makes you feel icky, but you're actually utilizing the groups that you can develop now on Facebook and private groups to help connect with each other a little bit more deeply and support each other in different activities. I thought that was interesting.
Nancy, I almost unplugged from Facebook this month. And then I decided not to, just because I've worked so hard at creating all of these connections. But yeah, the idea of, I was one of those people who thought about reducing my social media this year, but I'm still staying with it.
Okay, excellent. All right. Well, I've got this other article too, but I'm really anxious to get talking with you. And so I was thinking about it. I also read it in the Wall Street Journal. It's the world's fastest woman on two wheels, Denise Mueller. She bikes on the Bonneville Salt Lake, Salt Flats in Utah, and she's trying to beat the women's world record. But I was thinking today as I was driving, so she's trying to go like 170 miles an hour.
On a bike?
On a bike.
170 miles an hour? That's terrifying.
I know. I'm going to put a link to the article. But the equipment, I mean, it's got regular wheels on it, like a car wheels.
That's not downhill. How do you get going that fast?
Well, they use a truck to pull and kind of get to a certain level.
That's totally cheating.
I know, it's
but
really
very scary. Impressive.
Yeah, it's very scary. Anyways, I'm bringing this up because in her story, she happened to be a 43-year-old mother of three, too. And her name is, again, Denise Mueller. She would just go for these long bike rides, you know, 10, 15, 20 miles. And she ended up following this guy for like 10 miles. And he happened to be like really successful athlete.
And didn't she stop riding for some huge chunk of her life?
Yeah, 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
And then she's picked it back up.
Yeah. So this guy that she was following, his name is John Howard. He happens to be the venerable American cyclist and Olympian who, when she was 14, was when she was following him. And he was like, wow, you know, I'm not going my fastest pace, but I mean, for anyone to keep up with me for that long, you know, I better, you know, get to know her a little bit. And so he became her coach when she was 14, and she, you know, then became a number one racer and as a bicyclist. And when she reached 19, she just totally like wanted to just quit because of all the pressure of maintaining being number one. So she went on with her life. She had three kids. And when her 15-year-old got into bicycling, then she went back to John Howard and asked if he would coach her. And then he was talking with her about getting back into cycling. And so she ended up getting a driver and working with John to try to beat the world record. And so she was 20 years off her bike. I mean, she was always exercising and maybe did some small runs, but it was just really incredible that you can come back to something 20 years later. And I was thinking about that, and I thought, even for myself, like I had been away from playing piano for like 20 years. And then I got back into it because in our church, they needed an accompanist for, you know, just different songs, not regular, and a choir director. And I ended up doing that stint for a little bit, still play a little bit, but not frequently. But I just thought, you know, that's really encouraging to be able to come back and for her to come back and like, you know, try to beat this world record. I mean, she's already the fastest woman on a bike. I mean, it's 147.75 miles per hour is her record.
And what a great story in that it relates so much to what I've been going through as a business person, because it wasn't bike riding, but I lost my bike riding. And all of a sudden, the question of will I pick it up again? It's a different thing for me because I'm a filmmaker.
Yeah.
But at least I was. And so there's a really interesting question that's been burning in my life, in that I have created what I call the most amazing plan B life ever.
Yeah.
It wasn't my plan A. I love the life that I have, but that's been kind of the burning question of my age of 2017. It's the question of, am I off track? Was this all for something else? Did I settle? There's a lot of questions that I have as I look at what's next. And it's encouraging to hear stories where someone left their passion.
Yeah.
And later found it again.
Right. And through her son, you know, which is like kind of cool. Like, yes. He then can join her on the journey, you know, as he's learning to be, you know, become a cyclist. And yeah, it's a really unique way of kind of putting your life together. You know,
right.
We just don't know, you know, what's going to happen to us. I mean, we head in one direction and kind of saunter off into another.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us how you're feeling today.
It's an interesting swirl. Just got back into the thick of things with work and had a big presentation, had a coaching client. I had so many pieces that we're picking up in the business world. And I, I'm a little bit of a mix.
Okay. So a mix of just different feelings based on what situation you were in.
Yes, there's a lot of gear shifting when you run your own business. And yeah. I'm sure you know that. You have to shift into to one client's gear, and you have to shift into your presentation mode, and you have to shift into the intimacy of a coaching client. And there's just a fair amount of shift. I'm really not quite sure how I feel right now. And then, you know, the frazzle of getting from one thing to the other and ending up here. And all of a sudden, I'm trying to be present. And
yeah, right. Well, tell us a little bit about where you grew up. Are you a Minnesota native?
Not exactly. I grew up in Beloit, Wisconsin, and I spent most of my teenage years in St. Peter, Minnesota. I've been in the Midwest my whole life, mm-hmm. and I've been in the St. Paul, Minneapolis area for, I don't even know how long, 30 years.
Okay. Very cool. And how big of a family did you come from?
I have a brother and a sister, so little family of five, and we lived, when I think of my family, I go back to Beloit, Wisconsin. My father was a college professor of world religions, and he brought a breadth to my life and my perspective. He was a minister, Christian minister, but he was a world religions mm-hmm. professor. He traveled the world. He stayed in Zen monasteries in Japan. He stayed with Hindus. He would bring a rabbi over for lunch after church. And another time it would be a traveling lama from India. And I thought, when my dad said that we were having a lama over, I thought it was the animal. So I was really surprised when we had, because I thought they were going to bring a llama in the house for dinner. Okay. But in any case, it was a really interesting broad perspective. My mom was a teacher, and she taught Spanish. And there's I have an older brother and a younger sister.
Okay, so you're right in the middle.
I'm the middle. And I'm a Libra. I'm very centered and balanced, I think, in terms of both sides. I'm often the peacemaker. I don't know if middle children always are that.
Yeah, it varies depending upon what the culture is of the family, mm-hmm. probably. Yeah, how they're set up. Sure. Well, great. And what were some of your interests as a child? So you were brought into kind of a different world culturally mm-hmm. right away. And a religious world?
A religious world. But the interesting result is that when you're exposed to all religions, I don't understand how you'd ever pick one. Much more spiritual than I am religious. And I never had religion pushed down my throat. I simply had exposure to options and varieties. And I saw through my dad's eyes the goodness in all the people of all the religions that he would interact with.
Sure.
And to me, it all looked like the same. So how do you ever join a club? It was a really interesting thing. So I didn't follow in a religious way. I remained very open and spiritual. But as a child, I was, it was interesting. I was born a very emotionally sensitive boy. And today, I would say that my number one strength is emotional intelligence, the ability to feel what other people feel, to be aware of the feelings that I have, to let them flow, to let them interact with other people. And as a young boy, I would just sit. My dad said, we didn't know what was up with you. You spent the first 3 years under the kitchen table. My earliest memory is actually sitting in my yard just soaking up the vibe of this gorgeous, huge oak tree. And I remember as the wind would move, it was a summer breeze, and I remember the tree swaying, and I could feel the world around me. And that was my orientation to the world, is how everything felt. Mm. So it wasn't a world that exactly was ready for me or was prepared. I don't think the school system, I don't think the other kids really knew exactly what to do with that. And I was a bullied kid. Oh. And so the world was an interesting place to me. But I did love it. I had a wonderful childhood. And
how did you work your way through the bullying? What kinds of things happened?
I don't know. I mean, quite honestly, the bullying created something in me that created more of it. I think what happened is I, as an emotional expressive what I feel shows. And the interesting thing about bullies are emotionally sensitive too. It's just that they use emotional sensitivity as a targeting tool. They can smell weakness and fear.
Yeah.
And you can't hide from it. So I brought, I made myself a target because of fear. And that continued on into my 20s. People would pick fights at me with me at bars. I was physically assaulted in my 20s. I was assaulted in my college years, and I was assaulted in high school. And so I found the world a fearful place until I learned that I could work with the emotions that I had to make them show or not show. And today it's a very, very different story. I don't know how far to go with this. I got mugged in Philadelphia, and just last summer. I'm 52, and this man got in front of me, and he said he was going to beat me up if I didn't give him $50. And I looked at him, and I engaged him in conversation, and pretty soon we were laughing. We were leaning up against the wall talking about life. And I told him I wasn't going to give him $50, but, you know, we had a great conversation, and I walked away. So what was a weakness became a strength, because I realized that what you project is what you attract.
Yeah.
And this, I think my upbringing was surrounded by that question about what I'm attracting and what I'm broadcasting. And lo and behold, what did I become? I train presence. I train people to command an audience. I train them to be powerful in fear.
Yeah.
So everything that was my upbringing was extremely powerful. It made for great relationships. My relationship with my kids is amazing, but it was a hard start for me.
Yeah. It sounds very difficult. And do you feel, I like the way you turned that mugging situation into an opportunity to engage the person in what he probably needed more of was what you gave him.
He totally did. And I think in a weird sort of way, we were friends in that little way.
Yeah.
And it was I was so conscious, so alert, so aware, and relatively confident, even though I knew it was not a good situation.
Yeah.
And I've learned to trust that emotional intelligence. It's my night vision. It's my radar.
Yeah.
And now the very kind of people that used to be the bullies, they're the ones who come to me for help. It's a very interesting turn. You just have to ride it out until you get control. But I think I've carried with me the pain and the scars of what it was like to be afraid.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, I always, whenever I bring up emotional intelligence, I mean, even with Pete, we talked about Brené Brown's research about
absolutely.
Love and belonging. And, you know, and how do you feel, be vulnerable in a place where that's not safe without totally, you know, arming up?
Well, and part of it is you bring your own safety. And like, I'm a scuba diver.
Yes.
I liked the weight loss conversation because I'm trying to fit into my scuba suit, which I'm pretty close to. It's just I got it 20 years ago. And so I've got
oh, good for you.
And I don't expect the undersea world to provide me the atmosphere that I need to live. I bring it with me. And that's the metaphor that I take around safety and emotional intelligence. I don't ask it from you. I don't ask it from the world anymore. I bring it, and I will give myself the environment that I need to operate in. And the part of me there's a part of me that's filled with self-love. It's the part of me that can create that environment for me so that I can be here and that I don't need it from you.
Yeah.
It's taken away the neediness.
Yes. Wasn't that what your TED Talk was about, authenticity?
Certainly a big aspect of it was bringing the environment with you that allows you to be authentic.
Yes.
Within it.
Yeah, so you're not counting on someone else.
Correct. And you shouldn't, because you become dependent. Then you can only hang around with people who are like you. You need to be around people who think like you. You don't get the benefits of diversity unless you can harvest your own safety.
Yes.
Because what's really interesting is being around different people and finding what you wouldn't have found by being around six more of you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that also helps you become a more interesting person.
Well, I hope so. I don't know if that's, I think
well,
for me.
Well, it challenges you to kind of get out of your comfort zone or,
totally.
Or when you're talking with someone and they've got a totally different perspective, you have to actually pause and
yes.
say, how does someone come up with that perspective?
Yes. I just can't take any credit for that side. For myself, it was survival. It's how I learned to survive in this world that didn't seem safe to me. And, I don't think it's the greatest time to be the greatest era to be a man. I think men have a long way to go in terms of evolving their consciousness so that I think it's confusing to be a man right now. And I know it was
tell us more. The man's role has changed a lot.
Well, and look at how it's changed. One of the my hero is in a lot of ways is the women's movement. I think whenever this happens, somewhere very early on, men were told this is what you are and this is the box that you're to stay in, the masculine side. And women were told this is the feminine side, this is where you have to stay. And women just stood up and said, no, I mean, I was born into this with femininity and masculinity. I want this whole spectrum. And they set out to claim the whole spectrum.
Yeah.
And they're
their
well
identity.
On the way.
Mm-hmm.
They're well on the way. It's not over, but the women's movement over hundreds of years in its various forms has placed women on the feminine and the masculine side. You can be
yeah,
leaders.
Like look at these two women I was
yes.
talking about in these stories, right?
Right.
One is a surgeon.
Yes.
And the other is a bike racer.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what have men done?
Yeah.
Men have stayed more or less where they were. And we now share that space with women. And until men start to reach across and ask themselves, what over there in this thing that was called the feminine side, what is there for us? Because I think we are born into this world more full spectrum than our male role allows us to be.
Yeah.
And we're valued by what we accomplish and what we do. And I think that men have some evolution to do. And I think the women's movement is a great role model for where men could go. And when they go there, I think when men and women are both more full spectrum, I think society will notch up a level that might be, you know, too deep for where we're going. But I think this is what I was forming without any ability to talk about it. These were the ideas that I came into the world with. I was very full spectrum. I was very masculine and feminine. I was much more, there's...
So how did that show up in like the activities that you would do or the different contracts that you get now through Sage
Presence? It showed up only in my emotional sensitivity. I was, and you learn really quickly, the world tells you what you should be as a boy. And as a result, I locked into all the boy things. That it's just that I was much more sensitive. What I found myself doing as a child, I was mentoring and coaching my parents sometimes in relationships. I was dealing with my friends. I was the person that anyone could bring their issues to. Now, I didn't know that. I didn't know it was different from anyone else, but the friendships with me were different from the friendships that anyone else that was my friends had with anyone else. So they would come to me
to sort out issues
for counsel,
and problems.
To sort
and,
out.
Yeah,
I was the same.
To be heard.
And to be real and to be free and to have their feelings. That was always the role that I served. I didn't know it was any different, but it definitely was unusual.
Okay. And so how has that played out in your marriage?
Oh, well, the marriage is interesting because you don't really pick you could say you pick your lover, you pick your spouse, you pick your teacher. And one way or another, the two, in my case, I married my opposite in so many ways. This was a total opposites attract. And my wife is really strong, very leaderly. So on the yin and yang, the masculine feminine perspective, she's got a lot of masculine and she's very full spectrum. She's everything feminine. She's everything masculine. She's the whole spectrum. She taught me a lot about directness, about strength, about assertiveness, about standing up. I learned a lot about being a man from my wife.
Oh, and, that's cool. Beautiful.
And she, I connected her to a level of sensitivity that exceeds what she would have had. And as a result, we're strangely similar coming from opposite directions now because we've both learned how to be strong and soft. We're closer to balanced.
Okay.
It's been an amazing experience.
Yeah. And how many kids do you have?
We have two boys, 20 and 16.
Okay. And then, how have you role modeled then this?
Oh my gosh.
Different way to be a man or expanded.
It's, yeah, what I think it is.
Of who you are.
Yes. There's times when I would call it man plus. There's times when I would call it, just being more complete. I think most men come in, my kids came in as complete as I did. And I saw the real world package them and package away a lot of their sensitivity and understanding. So I'm a very open, both my wife and I are very open. We talk about everything. There's no subjects that are off
the table.
Yeah, they're off the table. And the best thing I did as a parent was I made sure that my kids never, ever regretted telling me the truth. So you can have consequences, but you must not regret the moment that you open up and tell them the thing you're afraid to share.
Yeah, right.
You do that, you must reinforce that. And so I made sure my kids never regretted telling me the truth, even though that isn't the same as there weren't consequences. So as a result, they come to me. And so that when they come to you, they're coming to you with the things they're scared about, which means you get to participate in their rational thinking and their reasoning.
Yeah.
And teenage world in my family was not an easy one, and lots of hardships. And I think honestly, there's a couple of pivotal moments. And as a parent, I think my kids are alive today, partially due to how I was able to handle some of the tough stuff.
Wow. That's a wonderful, I mean, that's how connected you are in conversation. So you didn't emotionally say, this is as far as I can go.
Oh, no, there's no limit. The other thing, my parents never shared with me their problems. I would let them know, you know, kind of here's what's going on with mom and I, here's what's going on with work, here's why this age is difficult for me, here's what's easy about this age. I was very open in sharing, and so they have a very clear, they have a lot of information about what adult life is like. I didn't have any information. You just look at these people that walk around and pretend to be perfect. Those are grown-ups. They do all the right thing, and they're always hiding what's really going on. There's no curtain with me. I'm transparent.
Yeah.
And my kids could sit down and tell you all the problems and the challenges and some of the difficult times because I thought it was fair for them
to
know what I was
going.
Yeah.
Yeah, you make mistakes. You're not perfect parents. So
yeah.
They saw the flaws. You're able to talk about the flaws and make some adjustments, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. And actually, one more little thing I learned about parenting. I allowed my kids to reprimand me. They were free to call me on my mistakes. And so early on, I discovered I have to say, oh, wow, okay, you're right. You are right. And I'm sorry for that.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting when your kids put their hand on your shoulder and say, listen, Dad, it's okay. You're doing a good job.
Right.
And you know, you let the power be more equal. And my authority was never questioned. It wasn't like I wasn't in control of my family, but it was a shared control.
Yeah.
And it went both ways. Discipline went up and down. And I think it was the flattest family experience that I would think you could imagine.
Yeah.
It was very good.
Okay. Yeah. And you're feeling good about where you're at with your 20-year-old and 16-year-old. And
you know, they're alive and they're thriving. And that wasn't always a given.
Okay.
It was not a given that they would be here right now. And it was tough. We had some depression issues and
Are you comfortable talking a little bit more?
Sure.
I think this is really beneficial for a lot of parents.
All right. I want you to imagine this.
Okay.
Battling some depression with a teen for quite a long time. And one day, my son comes to me and he says, Dad, I love you. I love my girlfriend. I love mom. All that you've done and all that you've invested in me, I don't want to live anymore. And I just want to know if you would let me go.
Oh, my God.
Asked for permission to commit suicide.
So how did you respond?
this was my finest hour. I'm not kidding you. It was my finest.
Right.
I don't know where some of this stuff comes from me, but I realized that I had to create a scenario by which it wasn't simply no. I made what I would call, if you've ever imagined the deal with the devil, I made a deal. And I told my son that I was so confident. I lost a friend in high school. He committed suicide at a dark time. I guarantee you, if he was still around today, he wouldn't even remember what he committed suicide about. And, you know, you get past that.
Yeah,
things.
Right.
And what I said, listen, if life is so hard that you can't go on, I don't want to make you stay. I don't want to tell you you have to stay. But you're not the one I'm fighting for. Because I can see in my mind's eye a 30-year-old version of you who has gotten over the stuff that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And the certainly the boy brain doesn't develop fully till he's 30. You don't have any idea how much capacity you have, how much you can overcome, and how many solutions and new ideas you'll find. I believe in this 30-year-old version of you who did get past it, and somebody's got to fight for him because I believe in him. And if you go now, you take him away from me. So here's what I said. I said, son, I will make a deal with you. If you need to go, you need to go, but I want you to promise me you won't take your life till you're 30. It's not forever, but it's a commitment to give that a chance. And my son said, I can wait that long.
Wow.
He said, okay. We shook on it. And he said, Dad, I can do that. Because I didn't say forever. I put a time on it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I was sure, and it was only a few years later that he was like, wow, Dad, I'm so beyond where I was. I'm so glad I didn't do that.
Is he still struggling with depression?
He struggles some, but nothing. The cloud
nothing
is larger.
Okay.
Nothing. I don't live in fear. I lived in fear. And I'll tell you, I was filled with a strange version of power and joy in that moment because I knew what to say.
Yeah.
And I knew it would – I believed in that solution. And then I had to go and tell my wife, honey, I told our son that he could take his life at a certain time.
And, oh, my God.
You know, and she said, yeah, that was brilliant.
It was brilliant. It's so brilliant. It saved his life.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I totally believe so.
I mean, the fact that you could even, did I come up with this?
I'm great under pressure. I'm really good under pressure. And the other story isn't going to tell as well or as quickly, but I almost lost my other son too. I almost lost them both. And I have a big role in their being alive today. And teenage world just didn't happen to be easy in my family. But I'll tell you, I see what part of it is. It's the same thing. Both my kids were bullied too. They carried that same sensitivity that puts you on the radar with the very sensitive bullies who need to find their victims. And talk about crossing the line. You know what I did to fix part of it? I don't know how I feel about this, but I taught them to fight.
Yeah.
No one taught me to fight.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah.
But I taught my kids to stand up for themselves in a way that no one quite taught me until my wife did, actually. And my kids are very well balanced, and they thank me on a daily basis. And it's been a wonderful thing. And I'd never give it up. I'd never give up those dark times because joy is wonderful and happy times are great. But sad times and difficult times, they make it deep.
Yeah. Well, that's where the character development comes
Absolutely.
From. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's parenting.
This is such a great idea for any parent who's really struggling with depression, you know, having children with depression.
And I can't say that my deal would work for others, but I'll tell you what is important. You've got to share. You've got to be open. You've got to make sure they do not regret coming to you ever.
Yeah. Right. There's no consequence to the coming forward.
At least in the moment. Yeah, at least in the moment. You can even discuss after they've gotten it off their chest, you can say, listen, we should talk about the consequences. This is too big to just ignore.
Yeah.
But that moment has to be rewarded and honored. And if you do that, then you can be the place they go.
Yeah.
So, and trying, especially for men, feel.
Yeah.
And
you have more than one feeling.
Yes. And it's constantly shifting. And listen for it in others. Feel the feelings of others. You've got to open that up. That's the potential for men, is to find a deeper level of emotional sensitivity. They can better mirror the women in their lives, who they're learning leadership and strength. They have more access to sensitivity, and we're told not to have it.
Yeah, and I like the way that your wife has learned these skills, mm-hmm. and is allowing the space for you to learn them too.
Yes, we are.
That's a really great partnership.
It has been very good.
Yeah.
She's the other person. If you're ever in a pinch, you want her there.
Oh, what's her name?
Kim.
Kim. Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Very nice. Okay. Well, this was a beautiful conversation. Mm-hmm. We're finished with our first conversation. Would you like to come back for a second?
Of course.
Great. All right. Well, we will wrap this up. I appreciate your level of vulnerability and being so real and authentic. And we will get to Plan B.
Great.
In our next conversation.
That sounds fine. Thanks. Okay. Thanks for this one.
Great. Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer and photographer, for being here. Always amazing. All right. Well, we'll see you all next week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process. Along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning, we do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.